There are points in my life when I find myself fairly stressed. These are usually times of immense change, or really any change at all. And in these times, I end up feeling like I have poorly patched the dam of my exterior, and I'm just waiting, wondering when it's all gonna break. The things I've known with sure faith, like my identity, my place in the world, and all of the other things that I've learned about my faith and my life and the love that I have been shown, they seem to become questionable. These points in my life put me in a place of very real fragility. I feel like my head and my heart and my body have to be handled with care. I find myself in more of a fight or flight mentality than I can usually name. And it doesn't happen all the time, but when I'm there, it is only slowly and surely that I realize that I am in that place of fragility. And I know that when I usually hear today's gospel, I don't think of the disciples as being a similarly hyper-tense and fragile people. And yet, as I read it again, I believe that they are. In our Wednesday evening Lenten series, we invited my friend David Peters, an Episcopal priest, veteran, and former military chaplain. He is primarily known for a memoir he wrote about his time in the military and what that did to his faith and his personal life. He shared with us about the influence that post-traumatic stress disorder has on veterans and the similarities between that experience and the experience of the disciples. He said that the Bible is a post-traumatic story written by post-traumatic people. I believe he would say that the stories we hear in Eastertide are specifically post-traumatic, as we are reading about the lives of the disciples immediately following a time when they watched someone that they dearly loved die a very gruesome death. Jesus and the disciples are people who have seen death, some with their eyes, Jesus with his whole body, and who have also walked to the other side, whether they've realized it yet or not. And it is scary to see death, even if we walk through it. So today we find the disciples fragile and confused, trying to figure out what life looks like. And I think it is my Alabama coastal subconscious, but whenever I hear about someone fishing, I imagine it as a recreational act. I imagine Simon Peter saying, "Okay, y'all, I'm going fishing." And I imagine the other disciples knowing that as the cue to go get the cooler. And I've always experienced fishing as a time of rest, and maybe even Sabbath, as it has been for many friends and priests that I know. But that isn't so for the disciples. No, when Simon Peter says, "I am going fishing," he is saying, "I am trying to go back to what life was like before I knew Jesus." You see, they were fishermen before they were disciples. And their desire to go fishing is an attempt to go back in time, to choose flight over fight. Their hypertense grief and confusion around their core identity sends them trying to scramble back to the identity they knew before they knew Jesus. You can almost hear in their mutterings the doubt that we only ascribe to Thomas. You can almost hear them saying, "We risked it all on a man that we loved and believed in, and then we watched him die. What do we have left but to return to the shoreline and cast our nets?" But the fact of the matter for the disciples and also for us is that we cannot go back to the way it once was. We are now a part of the resurrected life. When the disciples try to revert to their old way of being, they are met with barrenness, emptiness. They cast with the same arc, the same throw that they've always known, and yet they bring in nothing. Their net is only filled when the Lord sets their cast. Jesus says, sure, you can fish, but remember that now you fish for people. And when you fish for what this world has to offer, your net will always remain empty. The resurrected life means that we are no longer able to set our own way. Our way is the way of the risen Lord. The disciples can only continue to live in this new, confusing, resurrected life if they are willing to continue to follow, in the way that they followed, the living, embodied Jesus. We live into the resurrected life by running toward the deepest hurt in the world, while everyone else runs in the opposite direction. We can do this because we know that even in the deepest darkness of the tomb of death, resurrection awaits. So we choose to run toward the hurt. We feed the lamb. We tend the sheep. We follow even when we don't want to, because we know it is the way to true life. This resurrected life is where we are known to one another not through acts of power, but through acts of service, acts where we feed, acts where we tend, acts when we love. I think we have to pay close attention to Peter's conversation with Jesus right at the close of our gospel to learn how to follow Jesus into the fullness of his resurrection. Peter says again and again, Jesus, I love you. Do you not know that I love you? And Jesus says, yes, Peter, I know you love me, but I also simply know you. I know you need to be told the way. And so here I am again. Feed my lamb, tend my sheep, follow this intense resurrected life. Jesus and the disciples are people who have seen death and who have also walked to the other side. And it is scary to see death, even if you walk through it. But once you have, you are different. You know the height of the risk and the depth of the love. When you have seen death and walked to the other side, you also know that love is terrifying because it called you to risk in the first place. Sure, it is worth it, but nothing calls on our courage more than the willingness to love. Peter is trying to explain that he is willing to courageously love, even though his past would suggest that he is prone to run. I, like Peter, usually find myself kneeling at the altar, saying something similar. Lord, I know I ran, but I'm here. And I hope you know that I've always loved you and that I want to be brave. And it is in those moments when I know how prone I am to run that I hear from Jesus what I imagine he might be saying to Peter. Yes, I know that you love me, but I also simply know you. I want to know, is your love for me greater than your fear of the powers of this world? For Peter, following Jesus, even with this love that they share between them, is clearly not easy. The act of love in any capacity calls on the type of courage that only God can give. And I want to think that today's passage is Jesus forgiving Peter for his threefold denial. But I also want to think it is Jesus compassionately saying to a scared Peter, I believe in you. You can do hard things. You are already brave. Both Peter and I and our whole church will have to have a belt tied around our waists to lead us where we do not want to go, because we will rarely want to go where God calls us. Because when God calls us, following requires the courageous love that only God can give. Even Jesus, in some way, had to have a belt tied about his waist as he asked in the garden that the cup of crucifixion might pass him. And it was only through the courageous love of the Father that Christ could say, "Not my will, but yours be done." And we can only say, "Not my will, but yours be done," if we are willing to resist the urge to run and to follow the resurrected Lord rather than our innate fear. As I listen to today's gospel, I wonder where it is that I am afraid to go. I wonder what acts of love God is calling me to that I am actively running from because love is terrifying. I wonder for this church what is waiting for us if we would only but cast our nets where the Lord has told us to go. Because as we live into this Easter season, we must remember with the fullness of our entire lives that we are a resurrected people. We cannot go back. Now we cast our nets into the deep waters of God's kingdom, not into our own. Now we love with the courageous love of Christ that has the power to overcome even our deepest fears. A love so courageous, so everlasting, that it will find us even when we run. Amen.